Beyond the Burr Oaks, Chapter 6. In preceding years, I had always hated liquor, but now I relished it. I even began to get hungry. It had been a day and a half since I had eaten. After preparing a meal and eating it, I replenished the still and fire, then took another drink from the keg and sat down. I soon fell into a doze that didn't last long, for the sound of horses' feet awoke me. "Whoa thar!" commanded a coarse voice, and the horse came to a halt. It was but an instant when someone entered the kitchen and tread across the floor to the basement stairs. From the time two large feet came into view on the top step, I surveyed them with bleary eyes as, foot by foot, the owner of them descended the stairs until at last he stood before me. I shook my head and rubbed my eyes to determine whether or not I was seeing properly, for it did not seem possible that a man could be so large and rugged as this surly-looking stranger, whose coarse, weather-beaten face and piercing eyes made him appear even more brutal and monstrous. "Where'er that pine top I'm supposed to haul away?" he asked gruffly, cramming his mouth full of tobacco. I made an effort to reply, but my tongue had become thick and paralyzed from the two drinks I had taken. I just stood there on wavering legs, staring at him drunkenly, and twisting my face into all sorts of shapes, until I managed to mumble, "That's it," pointing to the collection of jugs of every description filled with moonshine. "All of 'em?" he growled, making an awkward sweep with his hand. I nodded. "Huh," he grunted. Grasping two of the jugs roughly, he mounted the steps, grumbling to himself. I staggered back and forth between the still and the barrels with pails of mash, which slopped over on my legs and feet. Having finished filling the still, I turned to see how the stranger was coming with his task. He had carried all the raw material out and was driving away. During the wearisome days that followed, my only enjoyment was to anxiously wait for Roy each day and question him about Dora and her mother and father. He would always have some news that would pacify my anguished mind for a while. Then, in the dull hours after he had gone, when I began to get lonesome and everything seemed so hopeless, my first thought was of that tempting keg in the corner. Without hesitating, I would take from it and drink until my mind was paralyzed. Before I realized it, I was a habitual drinker. At the end of a month, which had seemed like a year to me, I was a sight to behold, with a month's growth of whiskers on my face, with bleary, bloodshot eyes that showed constant drinking, and with dirty, wrinkled clothes that had not been off my body since I had gone there. On my 31st day, as I leaned far over the kitchen table with my nose close to a piece of wrapping paper on which I was jotting down figures, I heard the door slam behind me and turned to face Roy. "What you doing?" he demanded. I'm figuring out how much I got coming, and I am going to quit." "Ah, you're drunk," he said, trying to laugh the matter off. "I'm not drunk as that," I returned, "and I want my money, $620. "What?" he exclaimed. "You sure must be drunker than I thought. You can't even figure or talk like yourself. $620. Why, you're crazy." "Am I?" I hissed. "Well, you just figure $1 an hour, 20 hours a day, and multiply that by 31 days. Jerking the pencil from my hand, he began to figure hurriedly. After summing it up, he sat there for a few minutes before turning to me and saying, "You're right, Ken, but you can't leave me like this." "What you mean? There's nothing to stop me that I can see." "I know there ain't, Ken," he went on pleading, "but it would take me a couple of days before I could get the money, and then there's that mash that's fermenting and has got to be run off." "Well," I interrupted, "when could you get the money if I stayed and run the rest of that darn stuff through the still?" "Let's see," he soliloquized. "Tomorrow, I got to see Watchacallum. How would the evening of the day after tomorrow be?" he asked. "Can't you make it any sooner?" I coaxed. "I'm afraid not," he answered. "All right, I'll stay till then," I promised with a threat. "But be sure you're here that evening, or..." "Yes, yes, don't worry. Maybe before that, if possible," he promised nervously. "All right," I said, starting toward the basement. "You don't want me to refill them barrels with new mash, do you?" "No. I'll have Slim haul the extra corn and sugar away today or tomorrow." "All right. Then so long till the day after tomorrow," I said, turning to descend the stairs. "Hey, Ken, is there any liquor left in that keg in the corner down there?" "Yes, I think so. Why?" "Oh, I just wanted to take a couple bottles with me," he replied, removing two empty whiskey bottles from his pack sack. After he had filled the bottles, I watched him go here and there about the house, picking up his personal belongings. "What's the idea of taking all your things with you?" I quizzed suspiciously. I just happened to think I might as well take them over to Slim's place, being I'm headed that way." "Ain't you going to stay here any more after that?" "Nah, Slim and I are going in partnership after you quit," he explained. "We're going to set up a still at his place." "Oh, I see. I suppose you'll be taking this still and outfit over to Slim's, too?" "I don't think so, except maybe the engine," he said, throwing his pack sack over his back. "Well, so long, Ken. I'll see you the day after tomorrow," he promised as he went out the door. Again alone, I began my work with more vigor than before. Instead of cursing everything as I went, I sang and whistled. I felt like one must feel when they are to be pardoned after many years behind gray prison walls, where they have been serving for a crime someone else has committed. Even if I had done this wrong, my conscience did not bother me, because it was for those I loved, and it was a wrong done for a good cause. What ecstasy to think that within a few days I would be back among those I loved so dearly, to receive kind words of welcome and affection, which I had so longed for this past long month. How I cherished these thoughts, but I felt afraid that something was going to happen to spoil it all. The past month seemed now like a dream. Even the keg in the corner and its contents were neglected. The intense heat of the crackling, spitting fire and the low, churning sound of the boiling mash, musty smell, all went unnoticed now.